If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm
Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, but as always, I am the mere crusty bread to the soup that you have ordered, which is Finlay Martin, the former editor of Power Slam magazine, our bible as wrestling fans as we grew up, and now the author of the ebook series on Power Slam. Hi Finn, how are you today?
I'm very well, Kenny. How are you?
I'm good. It's Thursday as we record this, so we're almost at the end of the week. The weekend's almost upon us. It's been a pretty hectic week with wrestling stuff going on, so there's lots to talk about, and yeah, tons of stuff going on.
Yeah, and I mean, have you recovered from Sunday night, Kenny? Have you recovered? You know, we ended last week's podcast with the question of, will Jinder retain or will he lose the title to Nakamura? We know what happened. Have you recovered yet?
I kind of feel that's like asking someone who has found out they're terminally ill if they've recovered. You know, I feel like the gender experiment for me is just, I'm not going to get any better, you know, the hope is gone for me. So, the thing is like, let's get straight into it. The gender thing on Sunday, it's not, see if he had won in some sort of clever way, or there had been something interesting about it, that'd have been one thing. But he won with, I've got to think it's one of the top 10 worst finishing moves in wrestling today.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah,
I mean, it's an appalling finisher, and he beat Nakamura clean. And I think the problem with it is nobody bought it. Like even when you, it's almost like I'm driving you to a house, Finn, and I'm handing you the keys and going, I've bought you a house, here you go, and the paperwork's all been signed, it's all yours, and you go, but I don't buy it, it's not mine. No, it's not my house. And you go, no, I've bought you it. Like, I've paid for it. You go, no, that's not my house. I can't live here. This isn't my house. And you just, there's nothing you can do to convince you. There's nothing you can do to convince people that Jinder could effectively beat Nakamura clean. But luckily, that was not the main event of Sunday. The main event was Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon with, spectacular stunt show that they put on, and then a shocking turn at the end. So I think that luckily Jinder and Nakamura was, you know, put in the middle, which kind of made me a bit more okay with it. I thought Hell in a Cell, the opening match and the closing match, were well worth the price of admission. Sondra was there live, she had a great time. So I thought there was more good than bad in the show. But what do you think? Are you okay with, you know, I know Jinder won and you desperately didn't want that to happen. Are you all right, Finn, is what I'm asking? Do we need to make a call to anyone?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the show opened really well. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I even watched the kickoff show, Kenny. Sat through it all.
That's very unlike, I mean, you do sit through Impact, so the kickoff show is an upgrade for you.
Well, that's true, yeah. And even that was a good match. I thought, wow, this is a good omen. This bodes well for the show. I mean, there's a Hype Bros versus the Minnesota Wrestling Crew, I think they're called, Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. Even that was a really good match. Probably a few too many near falls for a kickoff match, but the fans were really into it, and it was, you know, that was a really good start to the show. So if you skip the kickoff match, my advice to you is go back and watch it. It is worth your attention. The opening Hell in a Cell match between the Usos and Big E and Xavier Woods, that was really good. Loads of kendo stick shots and fans really into it, and Usos scored the pin. And I really enjoyed the news on SmackDown two nights later that the feud had ended and with a truce as well. I thought it was quite an original way to end it. They'd earned each other's respect. I thought, I really like that. And also really like the fact that this feud is over. But I mean, what a match to end it. Rusev versus Randy Orton. I thought that was a really good little match as well. Didn't like the finish. Once again, Rusev was pinned clean, RKO from out of nowhere. And it's just like, well, you know, Rusev now, at one point I thought this guy really could be a top guy. This guy could be a somebody, and I don't believe he can be anymore, Kenny. And I think that's a real shame. I mean, you can say, oh, yeah, he could be rebuilt. Yeah, he could be rebuilt. But that's going to take a very long time for me to believe that Rusev could be, you know, could be a WWE champion. You know, I mean, I know we're now in the gender era. We've covered this before and the rules have changed. But I'm just going to try and pretend that gender is not the champion and that being a champion requires lots of talent, being over, lots of charisma, big connection with the audience and all these other things that it used to require. So I'm going to kind of pretend. I'm going to enter a fantasy world where things are still great, Kenny. And Rusev, to me, at this point, just doesn't feel like a guy who can be a top guy, can be a main eventer. Even enjoyed Baron Corbin versus AJ Styles versus Ty Dillinger. Even enjoyed that match. So I thought the show got off to a pretty damn good start.
Right, so, I mean, I as you were talking about Rusev there, I was reminded of yesterday, I had one of the music channels on the TV, and the Justin Timberlake song, Cry Me a River, came on, and there was a bit in it where a rapper was talking, and he said, the damage is done, so I guess I'll be leaving. And and I think that's what Jinder was mouthing after the match, when he had won and retained the championship. The damage is done, so I guess I'll be leaving. So he'd done his damage and he left. What do you have to say about this? You know, the Jinder Nakamura match. You've talked about the tag team match. You talked about the. You even watched the kickoff. You even liked a Baron Corbin match. It's all set up to be a great night, and then you watch Jinder Mahal get a clean pin over Shinsuke Nakamura. Take me to your thoughts, Finn.
Yeah, well, it started falling off after Corbin styles Ty Dillinger, and Ty Dillinger had been added to the match in the kickoff. And that was like probably my favourite Corbin match to date. And I thought, and even the fans were really into it. So that was, I was like, wow, this show is like, they've got the Midas touch tonight. Then it all started going a bit wrong. Charlotte versus Natalya. We did actually talk last week about, you know, the knee injury and stuff. And could they, you know, write in a knee injury storyline into the match, which they actually ended up using. But then they had a DQ finish, Kenny. I'm sorry to rewind here rather than going directly to Nak versus Mahal, but I just thought I'd just do it in chronological order.
You're building the story. You're teasing them all with everything else till you get to the meat that they want to hear you talk about. I respect your work.
But yeah, you know, so Natalya nails Charlotte with the chair for the DQ.
Such a flat finish. Like, wow. Such a flat finish.
Yeah, I was just thinking, wow, we don't really get finishes like that on pay-per-views anymore. And I was just like, okay, I understand they didn't want to beat Charlotte again. And obviously they want to keep the title on Natalya, who is great fun. We've said that before, haven't we, Kenny?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's mental, but great fun, you know?
Yeah.
And the best possible. I mean, I think Natalya is probably the worst actress I've ever seen.
Well, I think so as well. I mean, she just is. I mean, I remember some weeks back, I did mean to bring this up in a podcast, and she'd obviously been scripted to say something really horrible about James Ellsworth. I can't remember what it was, but it was a really horrible, nasty insult. And it was quite funny watching Natalya. I remember rewinding it and watching it twice. And it was just like, and she, you could see that she'd probably rehearsed it like a dozen times to get it right. And it just felt so forced. It just made it even more hilarious that she's been, you know, hilarious hilarious in delivery. The insult was just horrible, really. But that's what you expect from WWE, that type of thing, isn't it? But it was just Natalya's delivery was just so phony. You know, in a way, she delivered it well, but it just felt so forced as though it'd been rehearsed a dozen times, which I'm sure it had.
Can I ask a quick question about Natalya? I wanted to get your take on this. Is it just me or is she not as good a wrestler as she used to be?
I don't know. I mean,
when was the last time she had a really good match? Like, really? I mean, she was the match with Naomi at SummerSlam was fun, but like, when was the last time that she had a great match? Would it have been the Roadblock match with Charlotte last year?
Yeah, very possibly. I mean, to me, she feels like she's taking it easy in there, in that she doesn't want to get injured. Like she's just going in there. She knows what she needs to do to remain over, and she's not going to do any more than that. She's, you know, rock solid in the ring. You know, the other women respect her because she knows what she's doing in there. Everything she does looks really good, but it's like she doesn't overextend herself. She doesn't really do anything other than the norm. So I kind of feel like she's reached a point where she said, right, this is all I need to do, and I'm going to be over anyway, which is something that a lot of veterans do. So, yeah, I would agree. You don't really, when she gets in the ring, you're not expecting fireworks, are you? You're just expecting a sort of solid match, which is what she always delivers.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that, you know, down in NXT, you've got such a strong women's division. You know, you've got Nikki Cross and Kairi Sane and Ruby Riot, and, you know, you've even got Shayna Baszler coming in. You've got all these names, and I just feel like, you know, people need to be stepping up, because unless you've got, you know, like a Nia Jax, where you've got a look that's so unique that you can kind of get away with not being as good in the ring, like, if you have that kind of stereotypical female athlete look, it's going to be difficult to stand out. I mean, you know, but then again, she's a member of the Hart family, so she'll probably have a job there forever, just based on that. So, but
yeah,
anyway,
yeah, definitely, because she's been there so long and she's respected and stuff. I think she figures, well, you know, I'm going to be all right, and all these other women have to prove themselves, but I've already proven myself, so, you know, I don't need to do that anymore. That's what I think her mentality is. So then we have the Fashion Files. So yeah, that was fun. That's always fun. Fun little interlude. And then it was time. It's time for Shinsuke Nakamura versus Jinder Mahal.
You said that was more excitement than I've heard anyone talk about this match.
You know, it really felt like Nak had, you know, very limited support from the fans. And I was immediately disappointed, Kenny. It was like all your fears had been realized, that all, you know, the damage has been done. And it just didn't really feel like fans were reacting to him like he was a superstar, or worse, that they really believed that he was going to beat Mahal. I mean, I think if you were to take like, if you were to take like an entrance poll, from the fans, and, you know, of 100, and said, how many of you think that Nakamura is going to beat Mahal? I reckon 8 out of 10 would have said no, he's not. 8 out of 10 would have said Mahal will retain the title tonight. I don't think the spectators believed in Nakamura. And when the fans have sort of lost faith in you, that's at the point where you're, you know, Dolph Ziggler level mid-carder. And I just felt like, I felt it was a pretty flat match. It did pick up, and I felt like they really did get the fans into the action. But it never seemed to me, Kenny, like Nakamura was seriously going to win that match. Do you get what I mean there?
Yeah, no, I think it's a very valid point. It did pick up. I think it almost got to second gear, but never got into third gear. But I also think that the problem is they've done a lot of kind of finishes with the Singh brothers and stuff, and, you know, they do the thing where they eliminate the Singh brothers from the match, which is quite exciting. And then I remember watching the finish, you know, when Nakamura runs and he hits himself off the turnbuckle.
Yeah.
And then Mahal does the finish. I remember watching it, I'm just going, that's it?
Yeah.
But in my head, I'm going, well, it doesn't really make any sense, because, you know, I'm sure Nakamura kicked it of an RKO, he kicked it of an AA, and those are actual moves that can cause damage. And then he has to kind of, and the thing is, you can actually see Nakamura's, you know, he's closing his eyes and thinking of the Tokyo Dome when this finish happens. So I just thought the problem was, when you've got a finish that nobody wants, then what I would imagine you would do, just as an outsider, is that, you know, put it this way, when I was at WCPW, which I don't talk about too often, but when I was there, I had a lot of great times there amongst the awful management. But if we were in a meeting, you know, about a show or whatever, and we were talking about a creative thing in these kind of booking meetings, if there was a finish that you had to, if somebody had to win a match and you knew the fans weren't going to be into it, you would try and think, well, what can we do to enhance how it happens? Is there something that we can do that will create a little bit of excitement, or, you know, can something happen post-match or can something happen during the match that can just bring the fans into it a little bit. But I think as soon as he hit that move, it was just the deflation hit the room. And I think that... what was the match that followed this again?
Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler next.
And I don't think that match was particularly bad. It wasn't particularly good either, sadly. But I think that you can see how fatigued the crowd were, because the life was just sucked out of them by the finish to the title match. So, yeah, I think they definitely picked it up, but I think the problem was they picked it up and then ran into the most pedestrian finish possible.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I mean, Nakamura just, to me now, just feels like any other guy on the roster. He doesn't feel special anymore. I mean, that finish there was just, it was just a burial. It was just terrible to see, you know, this guy, you know, and then they did this sort of throwaway filler tag match on SmackDown to try and reheat him. And that just felt like, you know, it just felt so empty, like an empty gesture. And it's just like, come on. Yeah, very disappointing. I mean, I didn't think Nakamura was going to... Did we discuss who was going to win that match in last week's podcast, Kenny?
Yeah, Nakamura and Mahal. Yeah, we talked about, you know, the idea of would Nakamura win? Would this be the end of the gender experiment and that kind of thing? But, you know, I think with the December India tour being announced, we all kind of knew... I mean, I can't remember if it had come out when we spoke last week, but there was that thing where there was a print saying that Jinder was a two-time champion somewhere.
That's right, and I said that it was a red herring, or possibly a red herring, mm-hmm. and they'd done that before, which they have, and that was obviously deliberately put out there so people would read that into it. I mean, I can't remember. I apologise if I'm contradicting myself here, but this time last week, I don't think I really believed that Nakamura was going to win. And he didn't do. I mean, I hoped that he would, because I think he really needed that win there, even if it was only for, you know, 2 nights or 9 days or until Survivor Series. I think he really needed that win there, and they could have given him the belt until Survivor Series and then maybe had Mahal regain it with outside interference from Singh Brothers or any other, you know, outside interference from whomever Nakamura will be wrestling next. I really feel like that should have been the direction. If they believed in Nakamura, if they felt that Nak was a top guy, I think that's what they would have given us. And I think that finish, you know, speaks volumes about the way WWE, in particular Vince McMahon, feels about Shinsuke Nakamura.
I mean, I guess my question, as we kind of, you know, it's always difficult when we do these post pay-per-view editions of the show, because we always kind of have to jump from, you know, pay-per-view to SmackDown to back to Raw to whatever. But you know, Jinder was not on this week's episode of SmackDown, and I guess my question to you is, where do you think Jinder goes from here? Who is the next opponent? What do you see Jinder doing going into Survivor Series?
I mean, that's a tough one, because I mean, AJ, you would think maybe AJ Styles, but then AJ Styles did the clean job to Baron Corbin, didn't he, on SmackDown this week?
Yeah, so it's, and which, you know, to be fair, I do think that I want to give some praise to Baron Corbin. I thought he had a really good weekend. I enjoyed him on Sunday. I actually enjoyed his match on Tuesday. And do you know what I like about Baron Corbin is he's just an arsehole and he's happy to embrace it. You know, like, he doesn't give a fuck that he didn't wrestle in Ring of Honor or go to Japan, or he does not care. And I kind of love that about him, because he just embraces it.
They have definitely incorporated that into his character. So, I mean, good for him. I mean, you're right. He had a really good Hell in a Cell. He had a really good SmackDown. I mean, I'm hoping these two are, you know, can you have a twin aberration, Kenny? Can you have two things that are an aberration? Probably not. But I mean, prior to Hell in a Cell, there had been few highlights in Corbin's career. And we had spent a lot of time knocking him and talking about how mundane he was. You know, boring Corbin was the sign that was held up at Money in the Bank when he grabbed the briefcase. So, I mean, he has not distinguished himself on many occasions in WWE. So I'm hoping that this is the start of something. I mean, we'll see about that. Yeah, he had a great Hell in a Cell. He had a really good SmackDown. He was in there with AJ Styles, you know, who most would probably agree is the best in-ring performer in the company.
Well, yeah, I think he was in a match with I can't remember when it was. I want to say late last year. I'm sure there was like a fatal four-way main event on SmackDown that had like Ambrose, Cena, AJ, and Corbin, and I remember he was good in that match as well. So I like to call him Big Baza Corbs. That's just my nickname for him. Can't really tell you why. I just like calling him Big Baza Corbs.
That sounds like the hard kid at school, doesn't it?
It does. You know what I mean? Oh fuck, Big Baza Corbs is coming. But I think that one of his biggest strengths, I know I've said it before, but I do want to say it again. He was really good on Talking Smack before, when it used to be a show. He would have very good segments on there where he would, you know, talk at length. And what I like about him is that he's very different to everybody else. And he doesn't care, and he embraces it. And yeah, I think that he also, to me, is one of the wrestlers who doesn't seem overly scripted. And when you're made to give a line on TV of "cry all you want and I will buy a boat and swim in the river of your tears," I mean, there's not much more of a scripted line than that, and even that he makes sound not scripted. So big props to Big Baza Corbs from me.
I actually wrote that one down. This is what he said. "Every single one of you can look at this championship, the US title, and eat it, because this is mine and it's not going anywhere. And you can cry, 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 and I'll buy a boat and float down the river of your tears."
I feel like we should have our weekly segment of Finn reads promos. Just with you reading some lines. Who is this from?
We used to always have a section in Power Slam called, you know, "And I Quote," or "If I Can Be Serious for a Minute," and all these other things. And I would have quotes in there of things that people said on TV. And it was a really fun thing to put together each month, because you're watching the shows anyway. So you'd write it down, you know, verbatim. And it was, and going back and reading it was, you know, going back, you know, I was doing pro wrestling through the Power Slam years. And I used quite a lot of those quotes at the back of the book, and lots of others that were not in there. Mm-hmm. And it was just like some of the quotes that people have made over the years on TV are just so amazing, especially going back and looking at them or reading them again years later. And I thought that was a really good line from Corbin. I thought he delivered it well. And it sounded, even though it was obviously scripted for him, it sounded like he really believed it.
Yeah, and that's when you know you've got it right. I wish I could remember. I need to start writing these things down. But on the Facebook community, which you should absolutely join, folks, if you like discussion, you just search for Inside the Ropes Fan Community on Facebook, and Finn's on there, I'm on there. We get involved in the conversation with people. It's one of the only communities on Facebook where we don't really allow arseholes to, you know, shout over people and stuff. So it's quite a nice community of people. But anyway, somebody had wrote...
Well, why is it, Kenny, that in the world of social media, there's so many antisocial people? Why is that?
I think it's because people feel like they can get away with it, you know? Like, I mean, there's so many things that people say online, I think if we were face-to-face, you wouldn't have the balls to say that.
Yeah.
You know, it's the whole kind of keyboard warrior thing, you know? Which is
sad. One of Baron Corbin's lines.
But you know, because we've banned a few people from the community when like if you just start screaming at people if they don't agree with you. But you know, for the most part, we've got a great group of people over there. But anyway, somebody had written a suggestion for the SmackDown World Title picture, and I actually want to put my name behind it as well, because I think it's a great idea. Is that AJ Styles should be the one to dethrone to dethrone Mahal on the December pay-per-view, or even the Rumble if you want to leave it that far, and then have Shinsuke Nakamura win the Rumble, and that's your world title match for WrestleMania. But in order to do that, the one thing you're going to have to do is you need to rebuild Nakamura.
Yeah.
That's going to be the big challenge. But actually, controversially, for some, it may be a case of actually building Nakamura, not rebuilding him, because if you don't have any sort of connection to him from his New Japan days, have they told you a lot of what he's all about? You know,
yeah.
How many times can you say, "Oh, Finney, he's the artist known as Shinsuke Nakamura"? You know, I mean, for long-time WWF fans, whenever anybody says the artist, I think of the artist formerly known as Goldust, and we less said about that, the better. But yeah, yeah, absolutely. I like that. I like that idea. If we can get to Nakamura AJ at WrestleMania, in a big, you know, 20-minute all out spectacle match at WrestleMania, that'd be a good way to kind of get the WWE title feeling prestigious again. What do you think? Do you think AJ should be the one to dethrone Jinder?
Well, I mean, you did ask me that question, then I went off on that tangent, but I was going to mention Styles, but obviously he put Corbin over clean this week, so that's the end of that feud. So you would think that beginning next week, Styles is going to have to do something different. He's not going to go back to Kevin Owens. They've just done that. I can't imagine that he's going to be wrestling Sami Zayn. I mean, possibly he'll team up with Shane McMahon against Owens and Sami Zayn. Maybe that match will happen. But you're right, Styles, you know, what's the destination? You would think it is going to be Mahal, because Mahal doesn't have an obvious opponent either. Maybe they'll do like a battle royal on next week's SmackDown, or a six-way match or something to determine the new number one contender.
That's how we get into this fucking problem in the first place.
Well, yeah, exactly. You're right.
Six-pack challenge. Jinder won't win it, and then he does.
But the writing of the TV, because they're not plotting things and laying things out well in advance like they should be doing, because it's all done, you know, week to week, but they're coming up with stuff like, you know, every sort of 3 weeks they'll have a cycle, every 4 weeks they'll have a cycle. They're not really planning for the future. It means that Styles doesn't really have any sort of justifiable grounds to challenge Mahal. So that means he has to win a standalone match in order to be pitted against him and to be, you know, elevated to contender again. And if you're not creating new stars, I mean, you know, I think in a future podcast, Kenny, we should do a thing where we actually look, probably one for maybe for later in the year, where you look at the people and say, right, how many wrestlers are more over now than they were, say, 3 months ago? And how many are less over than they were 3 months ago? And that would be a very interesting thing to judge. And that's a really good gauge of how the star building operation is going. And to me, the star building operation is not going very well at all.
Maybe we do that the week of Survivor Series or something. Maybe we could do it towards the end of the year and then revisit it again before WrestleMania. Maybe that's a
yeah, definitely. But that there is a great gauge of your star building system, and the whole system should be attempting to build stars all the time, not in a way where it's shoved down your throat, because that breeds resentment, as we've seen with Jason Jordan, where fans were like, right, this is Kurt Angle's son. You have to cheer him because we've decided that he's going to be the next star. And that's what fans don't like. Fans don't like that anymore. If they feel that they're being force-fed an act, then generally they will react badly to it. They like to choose the stars, or at least they like to think that they're choosing the stars. So the wrestling company has to sort of harness that and really go with what the fans want, and that way they're more likely to get over as baby faces. That's my interpretation of the way things are today.
I mean, what I would say is, you never know, Finn. Maybe the WWE will look at things and say, right, okay, look at what Finn Martin has given to wrestling in his life. Right. Look at all the hours that he's put in. We need to give something back to Finn. So they bring somebody in to dethrone Jinder Mahal. They bring in the one man who maybe just has it in him, has enough of that hustle, has enough loyalty, and has the respect to dethrone Jinder. What if John Cena could climb that mountain, Finn, and be the one to defeat Jinder? How would that grab your vitals?
Well, funnily enough, Kenny, some time back on my website, finlaymartin.co.uk, I actually wrote a piece on this very subject, mentioning Cena as the person most likely to dethrone Jinder Mahal. So it's on there. It doesn't cost you any money. You can go and read it. But I'm sure you can guess how enthused I am at the prospect of Cena ending Mahal's reign. If you either can't be bothered to read that or whatever, you know, or it slips your mind before the end of the podcast. But before this podcast ends, you can't remember this and you've moved on to something else. But, you know, it's like, you'd think, is Cena going to be the guy to end his reign? And that could well happen. I think Styles would be a better choice. And as you say, that then sets up the Nakamura match between Styles and Nakamura, a big event next year, which is something that we've talked about before as well here, isn't it, Kenny?
We have for sure. But let's move to the big topic from SmackDown here. That's Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens, Hell in a Cell match. They built it for months. It's been the focal point of SmackDown television, and they have this kind of, you know, 40-minute marathon of spots inside the cell, on top of the cell, Owens getting thrown from the cell. And in the end, Shane McMahon about to do the big elbow onto the announce table onto Kevin Owens, but Sami Zayn is there to move Kevin Owens out the way, causing Shane to fall right through the announce table. Sami places Kevin Owens on top of him. 1, 2, 3. Kevin Owens gets the win. What did you make of this main event, the outcome, and the shocking heel turn of Mr. Samuel Zayn?
Well, I mean, the fans were into it. It's the Shane stunt show, as you say. He did the shooting star press. He did the Van Terminator on the dustbin, the Rob Van Dam move, which Rob was never allowed to do in WWE, was he, Kenny?
No, that move was reserved for our good old pal Shane O'Mac.
That's it. He did it for the first time in his match with Vince at WrestleMania 17, which was just a couple of months before Rob Van Dam joined the then World Wrestling Federation. So Van Dam, who invented that move in ECW, was never allowed to do it in WWF, WWE. So Shane did that. Yeah, he did his big stunts. I mean, the fans were with it all the way. I mean, you've got to say that the crowd were into this match. And that really is the big judge of whether or not a match is successful, I think, especially a match of this length. The fact that they were able to maintain that interest for that length of time. You know, you can sit there and say, well, Shane's punches are the worst thing since, even worse than Cena's. And let's face it, it doesn't get any worse than that. Well, actually, it does, Shane's. It doesn't get any worse than Shane's punches. Shane has officially got the worst punches in wrestling, possibly wrestling history. Why does he do those punches, Kenny? Why does he do them? They just look so terrible. Why doesn't he do forearms? That's one thing that a lot of the female performers for many years were banned from doing punches. So, right, we want you to do forearms because they look a lot better. Why doesn't Shane do forearms? I don't understand.
I like China's forearm. I liked when she used to do it. Looked good.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I remember in the late 2000s, basically the women were told, you know, stop doing punches and just do forearms because they look a lot better. And it was a really good idea. And Shane should take that on board as well and stop throwing those punches. And fans at one point were chanting, "You've still got it at him." It's just like, would you stop that chant? Just please, just give up on that chant. I don't need to hear that chant ever again.
I think the thing is, I'll be honest, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the match. It worked for me. But then again, I am someone who, I enjoy Shane McMahon.
Mm.
So I think that a lot of people's enjoyment will actually be stemmed from whether they can suspend their disbelief and go with Shane in that role. And for me, what I think was clever about this, and why I think this worked a lot better than the Hell in a Cell match with Undertaker that Shane did, is this was about a personal vendetta that Shane had against Owens for what he did to his father and saying the stuff about his kids. And, you know, a lot of it was about a fight, really. It wasn't about technical, you know, because whenever Shane tried to do anything like a wrestler, he would miss. You know, see, he would try and do the shooting star press thing, and he missed it or whatever. So the fight element worked for me, but I think if you don't get the Shane thing or you don't like him, maybe it didn't work. Whereas with Undertaker, what I thought was really problematic about that is that I don't think anybody in the world bought that Shane McMahon could go toe to toe with the Undertaker for 30 minutes. So I think this one worked better for me than in that regard.
I mean, there were some nice moves in it. I mean, I thought that they paced it well. The fact that neither of these guys blew up in the match and were able to complete it was like a real credit to their conditioning. I really liked the touch where Shane headbutted Owens onto a table and then climbed up the cage. I thought that was a really nice touch there.
Yeah, that was really well done.
Nice bit of storytelling there. Did you see
the bit where Kevin Owens was inside? It was when they were inside the cell before they'd got out or anything. And you know, Shane McMahon's kids were at ringside, and one of them must have said something, and Owens just shouts, "I should be your role model!" And I just thought, oh, what a line. So good.
But there again, there was a scene also where it could have been from the same spot, from the same moment, where Owens is like grinding Shane's face against the mesh. And, you know, in the old days, Shane would have done a blade job there. There would have been blood everywhere. It would have been like this really graphic, you know, disgusting, revolting, barbaric spot in the match. And then they pan to Shane's three sons in the front row, who are all smiling. It's like, can't they? Owens is just beating your dad up here. He's just beating him up. He's just like saying really nasty things about him and about you. And you're laughing. It's like, oh, come on. Someone smarten these kids up. You know? So,
well, to be fair, I mean, you know, they've got, give them another 5 years of childhood before the McMahons make them into, you know, necrophiliacs on air or whatever.
Well, it's like they could have at least looked not like they weren't laughing, like it was a big joke, Kenny. It's like the dad's getting beaten up here. I mean, at least make it look like you're worried.
Maybe it's all part of an elaborate heel turn where Kevin Owens is really the father of the three kids.
I thought that was piss poor. Piss poor that those kids did not look worried and they were there laughing. And it's just like, wow, your dad's... And Shane was really putting his back into it. I mean, Shane was like really making it look like he was upset. I mean, to his credit, he really got on board with the storyline. He was really selling it. So it's like that was the least they could have done was got the right kids. You know, when Kevin's beating dad up, look concerned, look fearful, look worried. Don't laugh.
No. It's a very fair point. So talk to me about the ending and Sami Zayn's involvement. What did you think?
Yeah, well, we saw... So Shane's on top of the cage. Now, I'd seen the spoiler or something. So I kind of knew the finish anyway. So, and I knew it was going to be something huge because Shane had to take the bump. I mean, the bar's been set now, hasn't it? He's done that before. He'd said that he was going to do something crazy in the match. So we knew he was going to take this ridiculous bump, and sure enough, he did. And it's got to be 20 feet, hasn't it, that cell? It's got to be 20 feet. So I don't know who does the risk assessments here, Kenny, but, you know, Shane's 47. As we know, he's got three kids, you know, who can't kayfabe yet. But let's give him time. Let's give him time. They're still young.
Oh, God. I really love the idea of you being backstage going, all I asked you to do was fucking kayfabe! As you make the five-year-old child cry in his little Shane O'Mac shirt.
So, you know, Shane's got millions in the bank. It's absolutely minted. He does not need the money. So... it's a tricky one to me. Do you admire him for taking these bumps, or do you say, what are you doing, Shane? You're 47.
I think it's both, right? It's got to be both.
Well, I guess it's both, yeah. I mean, it's like...
I've got to say, I think one of the most impressive things for me of that whole thing is that, you know, you, if you watch it in slow motion or whatever, the timing of Sami Zayn pulling him off to Shane hitting was literally about a second.
It was absolutely superb.
Sensational stuff.
Absolutely. So we were seeing Shane on top of the cage from a hard camera shot, and you could see Sami there right by the table. I'm thinking, who's that there? Is that a cameraman? Who is that? So it's quite funny watching it, and then Shane jumps, and, you know, WWE's camera work is tip-top. Absolutely bob on. But they got it spot on there, Kenny. I mean, they had the cameras, you know, they are so good at this. I mean, that is the thing for which they can really never be knocked. And you know, you've got to just be in awe of their production. And the camera work there was just absolutely perfect. And, you know, you think about that setup, getting that all right and getting that all planned. I mean, you know, you've been involved in wrestling shows, Kenny. That takes a lot of planning to get that right, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked on shows before where we've had multiple people and people working on cameras, and you always miss something. You know, and you always go, oh, why didn't we think of that? And the amount of, like, work it must have put in to get that looking the way it did is insane. And actually, for me, I don't know whether it was because I was very into the match. I was kind of caught up in it. I didn't notice Sami Zayn until the move had been done.
Okay.
So it even added more to me. I was like, what's Sami doing there? And then it was like, in my head, I saw him, and then I was like, wait a minute, did he pull him off?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, so it was, and I think for me, I was really invested in this heel turn. I actually thought Sami Zayn's explanation as well on Tuesday was phenomenal, but we'll get to that in a second. But anyway, sorry. So you were talking about the camera and Shane coming down.
I mean, it was a tremendous finish. I mean, tremendous, great thing for Sami Zayn. I think I did indicate on last week's podcast that Sami may turn heel, and that the whole, I'm sure I mentioned something about that. I want
you
to take credit for something that I didn't
you
say.
You did talk, yeah. Because we were talking about the fact that Sami had actually went up to Shane and warned him as well. You know, so yeah. They'd kind of planted that seed. I thought that the promo on Tuesday that Sami cut with Kevin Owens was just magic. It was.
I mean, there was no rage there at all. It was very refreshing not to see this, you know, huge amount of rage and anger in a heel after he's done a turn and he's there screaming. It was all very measured and all very reasoned. His explanation for why he did what he did, you know, Kevin was right, you know, and Shane wasn't interested in me. You know, I was just another guy, he didn't care about me. It's like, well, Kevin Owens has always been my brother, you know, whether we've been friends or enemies. And it was, you know, it was a very sort of articulate and reasoned explanation. And you're thinking, you know what? And it was a thing that I remember, I listened to it twice. I thought, I was trying to work out, was that really good or was that not really, or was that just sort of kind of average? Because he didn't really put so much energy into it, like, you know, a typical heel turn where a guy would be ranting. And the fact that it was just so measured and just so calm, I think just made it, you know, it was obviously the promo of his career, in my opinion.
Of
his WWE career by a wide margin.
Do you know what I also loved? As I loved that he came out to his music and he was kind of like, come on, guys, let's go. Oh. And did you see that he was actually mouthing at one point to Owens? He was mouthing mon frère, which is my brother in French. These two, I mean, they're so good. You know, and at the end, you know, Kevin Owens is like, Sami Zayn! And Sami's like, no, Kevin Owens! And it was just a joy to watch. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, very well done. I'm really excited to see where that goes, as I'm sure most other people are. You know, but just one final thing about Hell in a Cell. Yeah, I thought the touch where Sami Zayn placed Owens on top of Shane, you know, after the big bump, you know, Owens gets, Sami drags Owens off the table, Shane smashes through the table, and then they're selling, and then Zayn's there. No, Owens needs to pin Shane to win this match. I thought that was a nice little touch as well there, and it made the win matter. You could have just said, well, you know, Shane's visibly the loser because he's just wiped out, and Kevin's the winner, obviously, because he's not going out on a stretcher. But they made a point of Kevin pinning Shane, and I felt that was a big thing as well. And it meant that the match mattered and that the outcome mattered.
Yep.
And I thought that was a nice touch as well. And Shane went out on the stretcher, wasn't on SmackDown this week. I don't know whether he'll be back next week. I'm not sure when he's going to be back. But I mean, it was definitely the right decision to keep him off this week's SmackDown, and really great as well to see Owens selling when he came out, showing that he was still in tremendous pain, selling, you know, the effects of that match. That was a nice touch as well. So overall, yeah, very pleased with the main event in terms of where it's taking WWE.
Yeah, for sure. Now, obviously, we've got a lot more things to talk about this week's episode, so I'm probably going to quickfire Finn a fair bit here, but I do want to touch, before we talk about Raw a little bit, on the Neville situation. Neville, apparently, at Raw this week, was told he was going to be losing to Enzo in the main event and quit the company on the spot. Basically said, somebody, I think a producer went up to him and said, you know, you're going to be losing to Enzo tonight in the main event, and he said, no, I'm not, I quit. I just walked out. So the people think he's gone from the company, but it's, I guess we need to figure out whether he's going to be, you know, he's going to be under a gag order, he's going to have to, you know, not wrestle for the time of his contract, we don't know. But what do you make of Neville after this big cruiserweight run, King of the Cruiserweights, choosing to leave?
Well, I mean, my interpretation of it, Kenny, was Kalisto last week was added to the cruiserweight division, Neville quits this week. Coincidence? I don't think so. I'm blaming Kalisto for this one. Vindication for Kenny McIntosh.
Yes! Yes! Finn Martin backs me. That's a credible journalist. Fuck you, Kalisto.
I just think he's so appalled. It's like, you know, Neville probably wasn't happy as the King of the Cruiserweights. Probably wasn't happy with the overall quality. Kalisto's added to the Cruiserweight division, thus polluting the pool beyond salvation, quits the next week. That's my take on it.
I can totally see why you would do that. I can completely understand that. I do feel with Neville, like, you know, he was great in the cruiserweight division, really kind of held it together for the last kind of 8 months, 9 months. So I think it'll be sad to see him go, but I do understand that I think he is someone that if he leaves, he could do very well, you know, in Japan and the independent scene and all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've all got to make the right decisions that we feel are right. And I mean, I think his time was probably up in WWE anyway. I mean, what was he going to do? He'd had that long reign.
I think it all comes down to he probably wanted to be in the main roster division in a certain, you know, he felt his position was different to how they felt his position was. And I don't even blame them necessarily because there's so many talents right now that I think he would just get lost in the main roster division. So big props to the guy. It takes a lot to walk away from that kind of money and that kind of notoriety to say, you know, I want more for myself, so I'm going to go and do something else. So
He's got options, hasn't he, Kenny? There's a lot of places he can go.
Oh yeah.
And he can make good money. So I mean, maybe he feels, you know, this is my time, my time's up, and I absolutely agree it is. And you're right. Yeah, he was a guy who always saw himself as a main roster guy. Not somebody who's a cruiserweight guy, rather. Obviously, cruiserweights are main rosters. Heavyweight division guy. But, I mean, there's so many sort of mid-card level performers whom he would find it very difficult to leapfrog over, to move up the card. And WWE just really didn't see him as a heavyweight level wrestler. He was a cruiserweight guy. I think he'd gone as far as he was going to go in the cruiserweight division. I mean, who knows how much longer that's going to last. So he's probably picked the right time to go. I mean, if he does the right thing on the way out, which I'm sure he will do, he could always go back in a few years. And there's a lot of opportunities out there for him with all the different companies there are right now. So, I mean, he's got nothing to worry about at all.
And obviously the other news is that Jimmy Jacobs has been let go from WWE, partially because of a photo that he took and put on his Instagram of him with the Young Bucks and Marty Scurll during the Bullet Club invasion thing. So I guess just a two-parter, what do you make of WWE sort of choosing to let Jacobs go? And also, where does this rate for you as someone that's covered this for a long time in terms of kind of ridiculous...
Pettiness.
Yeah, or kind of ridiculous firings for things that you kind of go, really? Is that why you would let something go? Where does it rank for you?
I mean, it's high, it's a shame, and it's just the way it is there, and they've got their protocol, and maybe there were some people who wanted rid of him anyway, and sometimes they're just looking for a reason to get rid of you, and it could be the slightest minor little thing, and that can be it. It's a shame, isn't it, really? I mean, it's a shame that somebody who's worked there for quite a while, and it was, you know, a good gig for him. You know, because, I mean, it's hard for me to see Jimmy Jacobs going back on the indie circuit and really sort of making any money as an indie wrestler. I mean, that was sort of getting the gig on the creative team, probably for him, was like all his Christmases came at once when he got that. So, I mean, this has got to be a big blow for him.
He came up with the list. Chris Jericho's credited him with coming up with the list. So he was someone who seemed to be very good in that creative capacity as well.
Oh, I'm sure he was. But what does that count for? It doesn't really count for anything if you're not in with the right people in WWE. You know, if you end up on the enemies on the list, the list. You know, funny we should mention the list. If you end up on the list of people that are not held in high esteem backstage, then you can be released at any time for any kind of petty reason. If you don't have, you know, a bunch of people who will come and stand up for you and try and protect you. Maybe if Jericho was there, maybe Jericho could have said something, where maybe Jericho could have saved him. I don't know. I mean, as far as I know, Jericho is held in high regard backstage. Maybe Jericho could have saved him if he'd been there.
I think it is important to also say, like, trust me, I am not saying that, you know, they should have let him go, but it also was pretty stupid to put up a photo like that.
Well, yeah, exactly, after the cease and desist had been sent. I mean, to me, it feels like an overreaction by WWE, but maybe they think, well, hang on a minute, this guy is a member of the creative team. He should be setting the example to the talent. And here we are. We've just had to send this legal letter to these indie guys. I don't mean indie guys as in guys who, you know, work for little tin pot firms. I mean guys that are not WWE contractors, who we've sent this cease and desist to them. And now here's a WWE creative guy sort of putting a picture of him with them on his Instagram. And I can see that that would annoy WWE. I can understand the reasons why that would annoy them. But you would have thought they would just said, for God's sake, Jimmy, just remove that picture. Don't do that again. You know, I think that would have been enough rather than firing him. You know?
It definitely seems that way. Tell me quickly your kind of highlights of Raw. What did you think this week of the show, and what were the parts that you think are worth mentioning to our lovely listeners?
Let me think. What were the highlights? Obviously, the Shield reunion. That's what everyone was talking about this week. I mean, that was well done. I did amuse me that like about an hour after they'd reformed, in the opening segment, they came out again to beat up Braun Strowman. They were all wearing Shield t-shirts. That was a pretty quick turnaround, all those t-shirts, having them designed and printed, wasn't it, Kenny?
Listen, the WWE are very fast at coming up with stuff, and the stitching team backstage, you know, they came up with those in half an hour. Major props to them.
Actually, they were selling them at the merchandise stand before Raw went on the air. So
you know, it's funny to me, Finn, that you're telling Shane's kids to keep up kayfabe and you're not keeping it up on this podcast. So
well,
you...
I'm sorry about that.
Maybe Shane's kids are like you, they don't know where the line is. They just don't know.
Just call me Finn Double Standards Martin.
we'll see if that catches on.
I thought it was quite funny. Titus O'Neil came out with the banjo as Elias was on the guitar.
So my favourite line was somebody on our community had said, you know, so Liam Cox on Twitter had said, do you think that Apollo Crews looks at Titus's banjo and says, I wish I was that over?
Probably.
Oh God, the most boring wrestler. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, let's face it. Booker T did not have a good night on commentary, did he? You know, we had some banter about that, didn't we, on Facebook?
We did. So Booker T decided to all of a sudden during the women's match talk about a Mike Tyson Buster Douglas fight from Japan.
Yeah.
What the fuck is he on? But my favorite thing was on Facebook. You had here's what you had written, which I thought was tremendous. This is from the words of Finlay Martin. He says, there are times when you have to just admit that you completely blew it. On Raw last night, Cody Graves and Michael Cole were questioning Booker T about his grudge against Jason Jordan, whom Booker claimed needed to prove himself on his own without the benefit of handouts. The debate grew quite animated between the Graves-Cole camp and Booker. Mildly exacerbated, Booker said, you guys just don't get it. You don't understand. You've never been in the ring before. And my favourite part is at the end, Finn says, come back, David Otunga. All is forgiven.
It was just dire. I mean, you know, like Corey Graves, you know, had like a long career. I mean, Michael Cole has been in the ring.
He's undefeated at WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, well, even if he hadn't been in the ring, would they not be able to comment on it anyway? I mean, do you have to have been a wrestler in order to be able to comment or have an opinion on pro wrestling? You know, I'm not a time-served plasterer, Kenny. You know, I have no plastering experience, but I know the difference between a wall that has been plastered well and a wall that has been plastered by somebody who isn't a very good plasterer. I can tell the difference. You know, I don't need to serve my time as a plasterer to be able to distinguish between a good and a poor plastering job. So it was just like a double-layered ridiculous. It was a, you know, double shot, a double whammy comment from Booker. Like, firstly, these guys have been in the ring. And secondly, even if they hadn't, what a ridiculous statement anyway. So I think, you know, Corey and Cole were really, I think they were under orders to really go for Booker this week. And they were really shooting him down. So I think Booker actually was mildly exasperated, you know, in that response. And that was, he went to the old wrestler standby, you know. What do you know? You've never wrestled. That's the old wrestler standby, you know. That's the ultimate argument settler. the one to discredit anyone who's there knocking him. Oh, what do you know? You've never been in the ring. So, it's like, come on.
There you go. and then obviously, of course, they had to just... I do want to say, I thought the Braun Strowman Shield segment on Raw was just electric. Tremendous stuff. Like, I never realized how into the Shield stuff I was going to be until the Shield confronted Braun and I realized how much I wanted to just descend into chaos. So, I was into it. But of course, they had to... With every gift they give, they taketh away. And yeah, they had Kalisto channeling the ghost of Eddie Guerrero to become the Cruiserweight champion.
Yes, that's right.
What it a pile of shite.
Another thing that was very noticeable to me about this match was when Corey Graves, when Enzo came out and was doing his pre-match speech, Corey Graves actually talked over him. I just thought, wow, you know, this is a real burial of Enzo here. This is a real burial. You don't talk over someone's pre-match spiel. And then Kalisto win. I mean, Kalisto won the match, won the title. I mean, the match, in all fairness, the match actually was better than expected, and fans were more into it than I thought they would be. I mean, I was having visions of, like, Buff Bagwell versus Booker T and people leaving in droves as the match was in progress. You know, but people actually seemed to stay and did seem to enjoy the match. What else was on the show? A couple of other things that really annoyed me about the show, Kenny. One was, okay, we had the announcement, didn't we, that Miz would team up with Cesaro and Sheamus to battle The Shield in a TLC match at TLC.
Yep.
That was announced. And then The Shield had made a statement, oh, we'll take on anyone, any 3, 4, 5, whatever, you bring it on, we're ready for anyone. Then later on, Miz went to Kurt Angle and said, well, we'd like to take The Shield up on that, and there's going to be 4 of us instead of 3. And at that point, they introduced Braun Strowman as the 4th man of the team to battle The Shield. And I just thought that was a real humiliation for Strowman. I mean, prior to the Lesnar match, he was this indestructible guy, and now he's the 4th man. He's now part of a handicap match. So I felt that was... I didn't really feel like that did anything to build Strowman up at all. I don't know what you thought about that, Kenny.
I like the idea of Strowman being in the match, because I think it makes the match will be better because of it, but, I almost think The Miz doesn't really need to be in it now. Like, Sheamus, Cesaro, and Braun would probably be the team, because The Miz is more kind of the talker of the group. So I actually think that Strowman being in there is probably gonna outshine Miz being in there.
Yeah.
That's probably my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, and then at least it would be 3-on-3. I mean, Strowman was this guy that prior to the Lesnar match was like the, you know, he was the guy who was unstoppable, the unstoppable force. Mm-hmm. And it's like now he's on, you know, now they're going to need 4 people to beat The Shield. And to me, it seems unlikely to me that The Shield are going to lose, because I think that's going to be the faction that they're going to build everything around probably until Royal Rumble. I mean, maybe they will lose and they'll do a rematch at Survivor Series. Maybe that'll be the setup. Maybe Shield will lose, come back, and then we'll have a rematch at Survivor Series. That, I guess, would make sense. But yeah, I thought that really did quite devalue Strowman at a time when he needs to be rebuilt. I don't know whether he can be rebuilt into the force he was prior to the Lesnar match.
Lesnar match hurt him.
Yeah. We need to acknowledge the Sister Abigail thing, Kenny.
I mean, this could be the most glorious piece of drivel we've ever seen, right? Bray Wyatt in drag as Sister Abigail.
I mean, some people were like, oh, wow. You know, let's face it, for many fans, fantasy booking is the reason why we watch wrestling. I mean, let's face it, most of the stuff people come up with is better than what they deliver. So, I mean, this is why many people watch wrestling, isn't it? To fantasy book. Oh, what if they do this? What if they do that? And people were thinking, oh, yeah, they're going to bring in this new character. And that might have been a good spot for a woman to bring in a new female character that could have perhaps saved Bray. I mean, I don't know whether Bray can be saved at this point.
Should they have made JoJo Sister Abigail? Just a thought.
Well, that would have been a really good inside joke, wouldn't it? You know, I think that would have got over with you know, quite a hefty section of the fan base. So maybe, yeah, maybe that's what they should have done. So I would have liked to have seen a new female character brought in as Sister Abigail, and that they could have at least done something new with Bray Wyatt with a new character. And instead, as you say, yeah, we then had this sort of weird effect where we saw Bray Wyatt as a woman. I mean, to me, it was like the equivalent of taking a clapped out, knackered old car, spraying it with those cheap cans of paint you buy from Halfords and trying to pretend it's a brand new vehicle. I mean, it was just, come on. And like, you look at Finn Balor and you think, right, how can he, because they're saying, aren't they, that possibly Finn might be facing Lesnar at Survivor Series. That's one rumour that's going round, isn't it?
I mean, all I'm thinking is, can you imagine if somehow we get a segment where Brock Lesnar is confronted by Bray Wyatt in drag? I mean, just the possibilities of that alone would be, I mean, superb.
Maybe this is something WWE has leaked, you know, to stop Finn Balor from quitting. You know what I mean? You know, maybe the whole thing of, you know, the dangling this carrot. Oh, yeah, you know, do this thing with Bray Wyatt and this feud that should have ended at SummerSlam that's now going on still because we don't have any other ideas for you. But just do this and we'll give you Lesnar at Survivor Series. I mean, I've just no idea what to make of this in terms of how it can make either Bray Wyatt or Finn Balor a bigger star. I mean, at least it will be quite interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, at least it's something different, I suppose, Kenny. But I don't know, I think Bray's really, really beyond help at this point.
Yep, I think he's probably beyond help. I do want to ask you about a couple other things before we have a question from one of our listeners that we're going to get to. The Global Wrestling Network is now out, which is Global Force Wrestling / TNA's new subscription service, which apparently if you go to sign up, your card details are not secure. So
yeah, that's I saw that online. Yeah,
something to bear in mind. I mean, it's so TNA of them, isn't it? But you know, there was obviously the big Jim Cornette Santino Marella incident over the weekend, which has been, you know, everywhere. Santino confronted Cornette about the incident 12 years ago. Cornette tried to get away. Santino didn't let him leave. They got into a thing, and then Cornette ended up walking out, and so Santino was told to leave.
Yeah,
but unbeknownst to me, Santino was on Impact.
That's right, he was, yeah. I mean, well, he runs, like, the Battle Arts Academy, doesn't he? Up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they've been doing this this series on Impact called Global Forged, where all these trainees are, like, vying for an Impact Wrestling contract. Anthony Carelli Santino was actually on last week's Impact, the September 28th episode, speaking to a trainee, saying, you know, you're representing us and good luck. But yeah, he actually appeared on Impact last Thursday. And then after the incident with Cornette tweeted something about him being unemployed. It's like, hang on a minute, Cornette was actually featured on that episode of Impact as well. Obviously, not in the same segments as Santino Marella, Anthony Carelli. But it's just like, I thought that the situation with Cornette and Santino was all very regrettable, Kenny, really. You know, that 12 years on, they're still carrying on like that, still behaving like that. I mean,
I think,
you know,
we should make a pact on this podcast that when inevitably, you know, you and I end up having a fight over the Power Slam podcast and stop and talking, that when we meet at a convention 12 years later, we can just put the past behind us.
Yeah, I mean, well, what, you know, Cornette's 56, something like that, mid-50s?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Anthony Carelli's like, I think he's late 30s. It's like, you know, we've all had our moments in the past, Kenny, where we've overreacted and said and done things that we shouldn't have done. I know I have. Yeah, I certainly have. But you sort of try and look back on them and think, you know, I don't want to do that again. I was really ashamed of the way I behaved back then, and I'm going to try and become a better person, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's how you hopefully go through life. And to see footage of that posted last weekend was just like, I just thought it was really disappointing on both their, particularly with Cornette there yelling. I mean, I don't know who was at fault. I mean, you can choose your side. You can choose your hero, choose your villain. I think they were both at fault, really. I think it would have been... I mean, Corelli put out a long statement about it as well, didn't he? Did you see that?
I did, and Cornette's now put out a response to him as well. So, you know, I just think it's kind of... I mean, Cornette's whole side is I just wanted him to leave me alone, and Morella's side is he wanted to kind of confront this issue. I mean, the thing is, I would imagine if you're Santino, that situation is still going to fuck you off. You're still going to be really annoyed about it. So it's just kind of regrettable, you know?
It is definitely. I mean, that story has somehow has followed him around for the last 12 years. And, you know, I just think it's very disappointing that they couldn't have just avoided each other or just said, listen, you know, that happened then. It's now 2017. Let's just move on. It was, Cornette was under a lot of pressure at the time. You know, he didn't like working for WWE. It was a very tough time for him. As a consultant with OVW, I think he'd been suspended the previous month I can't exactly remember why he was suspended. Well, we were given a leave of absence. I can't remember if this is officially a suspension or a leave of absence, but he was ready to go anyway. So it was a difficult time for him, a very strained time for him. I think it would have been nice if they just sort of said, listen, I was out of line, or I overreacted, or let's just forget it. You know, we were both out of line. Well, you know, there's lots of ways it could have been dealt with without them having a big argument and then them both leaving the convention, you know?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Before we head off this week, we did have a question from one of our listeners, Patrick Gallagher, who'd sent this in a couple of weeks ago. So we're now going to get round to it as the sort of final part of this week's show. So here's what he said. First off, I'm loving the show every week, especially the gender bits, but let's just hope he doesn't get a CM Punk lengthy reign as champ or Bruno.
Well, Bruno, yeah.
Fuck's sake, can you imagine?
1963 to 1971. You know, just think, you know, could it be like another 7 years of gender, Kenny?
I was momentarily trying to think of how I could take my own life. I was just trying to think of quick ways to commit suicide. My question for you is, if you were to grade the latest crop of talent to move up from NXT over the past couple of years, who are the biggest winners and losers? Most of the women who have moved up have done well, but Balor, Joe, Ty, and so many others who would have been brought up with seemingly no plan to make them the future stars or even a contingency plan if they suffer injuries in return. So I guess he's kind of asking us, of people who have come up from NXT, who would we say are the biggest winners and losers on the main roster right now?
Baron Corbin's looking pretty good this week.
He is. Big Baza Corbs is looking good. I think Samoa Joe was looking great up until his injury. You know, he was big part of the big Brock Lesnar match in July. And then the Fatal 4-Way at SummerSlam. So I think Joe's done pretty well for himself. You know, he debuted, you know, right at WrestleMania season, taking out Seth Rollins. Mm. So that's been good.
I can see Joe coming back at Survivor Series, being part of a... elimination match. I can see them making a big song and dance about that.
Yeah, I hope so. And I think he's going to be there's a part of me that would just love to see the Shield against Lesnar, Joe, and Braun. That could be tremendous, but we'll see whether they pull that off. I think one of the biggest losers of the main roster, and it's only really been the last couple of years, is Bray Wyatt. You know, we talk about him quite a lot. He's someone who... I don't know if you put the blame on him or the blame on the company for creative, but it's just the last couple of years have been really tough for him as a character. And I think a lot of people had thought that he was going to be the new Undertaker in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's... I mean, there's just been so many miscues and so many misfires with Bray, as I just said just a moment ago. I mean, I don't know whether he can be saved at this point. So it's really tough. Yeah, he was a guy, as you say, everyone thought, oh, he's going to be the next Undertaker. He really did seem like somebody who wouldn't miss, you know, been Husky Harris in NXT. Then he'd gone down to, the actual FCW, then NXT as it became. And then they come up with this new character for him. You know, wow, this, you know, is almost a bit like Max Cady from the Cape Fear movie. What was the Dan Spivey character called? Will and Mercy. People kind of saw it as like a modern version of Will and Mercy, which never really went anywhere, but seemed like a fascinating character back in the mid-90s when WWE, or WWF as it was then, didn't really have that many fascinating characters. So, and Bray really brought a tremendous sort of sense of, like an eerie feel to the character, a sense of realism, almost like Jake Roberts is at his best on promos. And I really feel like Bray was a guy that could have gone so much further than he has. And there's many reasons why he hasn't realized his potential. And it's such a shame with Bray, Kenny, because you can see the guy's got so much talent, hasn't it? You can just see he can do so many different things.
I think he can. I think the one thing I would maybe disagree with you on is I don't know if he's that great in the ring, because I've just not seen that many matches of his that compel me. I think that he is more, for me anyway, he's more of a moment performer than a match performer. Like,
yeah.
He can create a moment that I'm like, oh my god, I'm so into this. You know, I wanted him to destroy The Rock at WrestleMania. There was that great scene at the Royal Rumble last year where he faces off against Triple H, and you know, you just want to scream, murder him! So in terms of moments, I think he's great, but I just think, match-wise, it's not clicked for me in a long time. But I also think, if you go back to that night last April, just after WrestleMania 32, and he basically turned babyface and teamed with Roman Reigns, people wanted to get behind him.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the key to Bray Wyatt, is he has to do that. Maybe the key is for him to go babyface.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's... I mean, it's really hard to know what's going to happen. We've got to figure that the TLC match with Finn Balor is going to be the end of this feud, please.
Oh God, I hope so.
So it's going to be, I think, a real milestone for him, that match, in terms of where he goes next. Is it going to be up? Is it going to be escalator up or the escalator down? You know,
yeah.
I have no idea where he goes after that.
There's also quite a few people that we've actually spoken about on a weekly basis that I don't think, you know, we probably shouldn't go back into having the same discussions that we always have. People like Bayley, who's probably not had the success that we wanted her to have, which we've talked about how that, you know, that the trouble with Bayley was there in NXT, not before she got to the main roster. I think Nia Jax has been successful on the main roster. I don't know if you'd agree with that. I quite like her run so far. It's been not necessarily... She's not come up and been the top woman, but she's kind of kept a presence throughout.
Yeah, she had a great night, didn't she, at the last Raw pay-per-view? I mean, she did really well there. That was a really strong match, and she was presented as... She was like the star of that match, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at this week's Raw, I mean, they had that five-way match, didn't they? Five-way elimination match. It was quite interesting as well, is that Michael Cole had somehow not been told it was an elimination match, and when someone was pinned, he thought the match was over.
He thought Bayley had won?
That's it. And it was just like five-way match... and the winner will face Asuka at TLC. So it was good that they're building up her debut. So they're really making a big deal out of that. You know, Bayley, you saw the match. Bayley pinned Dana Brooke really quickly. Then Alicia Fox shockingly pinned Bayley. It's like, well, that just came from out of nowhere. And then mm-hmm. Banks scored like an unconvincing tap out win over Alicia Fox. And I just felt those two together were rotten in the ring. And then Emma grabbed like a really crappy like fluke pin on Banks. So it's
terrible.
Like, and you're just like, hang on a minute. I understand in a sense why you're doing this, because you can sacrifice Emma to Asuka at TLC, but you've just sacrificed all these other people to create Emma as a challenger for this new character. I mean, I just thought the booking of that was dismal, Kenny. I mean, and the match just had no time. I just saw everyone in that just ended up looking like a jobber.
Yeah, no, I completely get where you're coming from. I do just want to say a couple of big success stories, I think, of NXT. Kevin Owens
Kevin Owens, yeah.
What a story. And funnily enough, somebody I would have put down a month ago as a loser would have been Sami Zayn. And now
yeah.
I would, and I think what's interesting about your question, Patrick, is that I think all, like you were saying earlier, Finn, about, you know, if you look at the last three months of where somebody is from then to now, it can change so dramatically. So I don't think anyone's ever truly a failure or a success, because it can always change. Kevin Owens has been pretty much a success the whole time. He's been a champion of something. A guy like Tyler Breeze, we thought he was dead in the water, and then Breeze Angle came up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a fun act. They're doing really well. They know they've got their roles on SmackDown, and no one else does that. I mean, even the Ascension, who appeared to have flatlined, they're doing all right now. Because they're part of the Fashion Police, Fashion Files segments. And okay, it's like a comedy role, but people do enjoy them in that role. And they were a total failure as this Road Warriors knockoff. So, I mean, all right, they're in a comedy role, and a lot of people say, well, you know, funny doesn't equal money, as Jim Cornette was famously said. But it's just like, you know, you need that comedy segment, and that's, they've found their niche there, as ridiculous as that sounds. As I said, Baron Corbin's doing well this week. Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens are doing well this week. Jason Jordan, that character. I mean, why have they put him in those coloured tights, Kenny? Yellow and green. It reminds me of that. At one point, Cena had this merchandise that was yellow and green. And it was just like, let's face it, Cena's merchandise, probably about 9 out of 10 Cena merchandise designs have been ghastly. But that one really sticks out as one of the worst, yellow and green. And like, why have they put Jason and Jordan in yellow and green? And it, to me, it just looks like, do you remember the Natural Born Thrillers in WCW in like 2000? Mm-hmm. He looks like a Natural Born Thriller in that outfit. Jason Jordan's really struggling, and American Alpha should have been so much bigger than they were. On this week's SmackDown, Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin won the match, didn't they, to receive a future title match with the Usos. So I don't really know how far that team can go, because I don't think Shelton Benjamin's particularly charismatic. That's forever held him back throughout his entire career. They might be able to have a good little run there before they split. Chad Gable's a guy who, I don't know what he needs to do to become a star in this company, because he's not that big. Physically, he's not that large. But to me, he's a real talent. And I remember when he first started in NXT and he put his team together with Jason Jordan, and they were heels at that point, and they had some really good segments together. I thought they were really cocky and exuded charisma and real zing as heels, real zest. And then they turned them face, and I don't really think they were as good as faces, although they were very successful in NXT. So I'm not sure how Gable becomes the guy that I would like him to be. I don't know whether that'll ever happen, but at least they're on the escalator up at the moment, rather than on a downward spiral like some people, such as Bailey, for instance, after that loss to Alicia Fox in that five-way match on Raw this week.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what it shows you from this conversation is there can be people who we think are failures or think are successes, and then it can change just by a storyline hitting or whatever. You know, I think Breeze Angle are a great act, and I don't think they should ever feel that they are. I think their place on SmackDown is one of the most important ones, so
definitely.
Welcome that kind of stuff.
I mean, Corey Graves, you could say Corey Graves has been one of the biggest successes, Kenny.
Yeah, best commentator in the last decade, at least.
You know, he's there on Raw and SmackDown this week. I mean, they really value him. I mean, he was a guy who would never have got this far as a wrestler. So, I mean, he's probably... I mean, obviously, we've got this week, we've got Corbin, and we've got Kevin Owens, we've got Sami Zayn. They're the three in-ring, obvious three in-ring examples of hits. But Corey Graves is a guy who right now is... If anyone is stable, if anyone is in a position... which seems almost untouchable, maybe it's Graves. Maybe he's the biggest success story from NXT.
There you go. So let us know who you think the biggest successes or failures are, and if there's any that we've maybe not mentioned, we can maybe pick it up again if there's some other people that people want us to talk about. I do very, very quickly want to say, please don't ever click on an article that says it's a wrestling piece of news from The Sun, because somehow this whole Conor McGregor going to WWE thing went all over the internet, and none of it's true. There's been no talks with WWE and Conor McGregor, so please don't give The Sun any ammunition to actually, be journalists. when it comes to wrestling. But Finn, I've got one thing I want to say to you before we go.
And what is that, Kenny?
I would like to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much, yes.
You are turning the ripe old age of 37. And,
37,
you look great for 37.
Thanks, Kenny.
So, it must have been an easy paper round for you back in the day. So, are you planning to do anything special with your big day that you can tell us about on air?
I'm turning 48, as some people will know. I'm actually looking at a business opportunity, Kenny, tomorrow, up in the Lake District. So we'll see if that comes off. So hopefully it's like a part-time thing. So maybe that will be viable and maybe it won't. So I'm looking at that, tomorrow morning, which you might think, oh, that's not really a fun thing to do on your birthday, but, I'm quite excited about that. So it's nothing to do with, Power Slam, nothing to do with wrestling, nothing to do with words. So we'll see if that happens. That'd just be part time. If it does, I'm looking forward to it, and I can continue doing these podcasts and bits of writing and stuff. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, Kenny. So maybe today, maybe tomorrow will be big day for me for another reason apart from it being my birthday. So looking forward to that.
I hope you enjoy it. I hope you have your favorite food. Do whatever makes you happy. And just, get out that old John Cena unreleased collection and just enjoy some spot calling and some light, brightly colored shirts.
That's it. I mean, after that, what I'll be doing is I'll be watching my old John Cena Blu-rays out, be decked out my Cena merchandise, watching episode 2 of the first season of Total Bellas,
With that said, Finn, how can people get in touch with you if they want to wish you a happy birthday or debate with you their favourite colour of John Cena merchandise? Where can they get in touch with you to do that?
They can follow me on Twitter at Finlay Martin or at Powerslam Online. And there's my website, which is www.finlaymartin.co.uk. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can get me at KennyMC1985, or you can get the brand Inside_the Ropes on Twitter. Also, we've just announced Scott Hall is coming to Glasgow with us on December 3rd. You can get tickets for that or tickets for Kevin Nash on November 20th, the day after Survivor Series in London, or the very, very last of the general admission tickets for Shawn Michaels in January. You can get all that at insidetheropes.co.uk. But as always, thank you for listening to the Power Slam podcast. The thousands of you that keep us going every single week. We'll be back next week. Get in touch with us if you get any specific topics you want us to talk about. And hopefully by this time next week, Kalisto will have realised that wrestling is not his calling and he will join a ministry and I will never need to see him again. We can only hope. Bye, everyone.
Bye. If I'm sad tonight.